We are here today with Dakota from DBCB Exotics. So give a warm welcome. First time on the podcast, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So this is Dakota.
Hey, how's it going, folks?
What's going on, man? Thank you so much for being willing to come on. I'm kind of excited to talk to you about, I've just recently got my first crested geckos. I've had a day gecko for a while, leopard geckos for a long time, but tokay gecko is something I've always wanted. And I've seen some of your posts on Instagram. Looks like you've got some amazing selection of geckos. So I'm looking forward to having this conversation. But to start off, if you could just kind of introduce yourself, tell everybody a little bit about who you are, where you come from, what you do.
Yeah, for sure. So my name's Dakota. I'm the owner of DBCB Exotics. We are a reptile breeding business based out of New England. Currently, we are working with a variety of different geckos, crested geckos, gargoyles, chihuahua, a couple of varieties of day geckos, crimsons, Madagascan giants, standing eye, and then my bread and butter being tokays.
Oh, that's very cool. Just kind of looking, I'm going to put it back on you for a second. Looking behind you there, I see what looks like a couple of, are those Zen Habitat enclosures?
Yeah, we've been affiliated with Zen Habitat for a couple of years now. They've been pretty good to me. So they sent me at the beginning this one, and then just recently they sent me this massive 4x2x4. I think it's their biggest enclosure. And you can't really see them because the basking light, but there's a frilled lizard right on top basking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I can kind of see maybe a foot or something. Well, I think I saw something move. I can see its tail for sure. That's awesome. And for everybody listening and not watching the video, you're missing out. I actually got a Zen Habitat enclosure. Oh, man, those poor people. They sent it to me fall of last year, probably. And it kind of worked out an arrangement where they would essentially give me the enclosure for free. And then I make a video about it, moving my snake in there and all that kind of stuff. And it was just a really slow process because I procrastinate and had other projects going on. And like, then we got COVID and a bunch of other stuff happened. So it was like, it sat in a box in the garage for like a month. Then I put it together and it sat there for a month. And then I started building it out and, you know, and I was doing like the whole foam background with the do it your, or what is that? The great stuff, expanding foam and. So just like you could do one step and then you got to let it cure and dry for a couple of days, or sometimes I would let it go for a couple of weeks. So it was like this just slow progress. And now it's done. The snakes moved in there, plants grown in, all that fun stuff. And I just have to edit it and put it out. It's like, but I feel like by the time I put it out, they're going to be like, oh man, we forgot we even sent you something. That was almost a year ago. But they seem like really cool people. So what are you keeping in the, was it kind of look like a bearded dragon enclosure, but I don't know what's there to you.
Yeah,
left?
So we have, this is actually my wife's bearded dragon.
Oh, okay.
So we did a full bioactive planted vivarium. As we were saying a little bit earlier, he's actually eating the plants right now. So
yeah. And you got that, that bioactive substrate kind of lip that they provide. Which is
yeah,
cool.
That was the cool thing about Zen Habitats is a lot of it's so like, I don't know if you guys can see underneath me, but that's my bearded dragon. He's in a AP cage and there's no lip. So I can't really build the substrate as much as I would like. I kind of have to like figure it out and jerry rig it. But with Zen Habitats, they send you this little substrate thing. So you can fill this thing full of substrate, at least enough for plants and everything like that.
Yeah. I definitely like that feature. Thought it was pretty cool. My biggest concern is, or was, when I put it all together and I knew I was going to do a bioactive enclosure, have like, just a small misting system in there. I mean, like one nozzle, just kind of spray the plants down occasionally, that it was going to leak just because the way that they're, you know, they're put together. Yeah. And I sealed it up with some, the aquarium silicone and, have had no issues. That was like the main reason, like I wanted to let the plants grow in for a while before I moved the snake in. But I also wanted to like let it sit for a while, see if it was going to be leaking because I have them stacked. So I didn't want it to like leak onto the enclosure below it. And, you know, it's been a few months now and I've had no issues at all. So, you know, I'm very pleased with that. I'm excited to get that video out. But yeah.
Yeah. Zen Habitats get some negative press, I guess. A lot of people don't like them. I don't know why. You know, I think they're a fine enclosure. It's a great price, competitively speaking, what's on the market. I don't know. I think they're a cool enclosure. I don't know why people have so many bad things to say about them.
I've only seen, I mean, I'm not huge in the reptile kind of niche and echo chambers. So I haven't been exposed to a lot. I've only seen one person say anything negative about them, really. And that was, what was that kid's name?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I saw that video. I was like, oh, man, it doesn't seem good. But then I saw other people say really good things about him. So I was like, well, I'll give him a try. It was actually Tarantula Cat because I saw that video and I was like, yeah, that kind of looks like some just, you know, poorly made kind of stuff. And then Tarantula Cat got one and has her bearded dragon and just been raving about it. So I was like, all right, well, if you like it, I trust you. I know you.
And yeah, the really cool thing about Zen Habitats was I remember seeing them like 5 or 6 years ago, right? And they were kind of the pioneers when it came of these were used to be, this was all you could get, the 4x2s. And they were kind of like made specifically for bearded dragons as we went from evolving from the ideology that a 40 gallon is the minimum size for an adult going into now what we believe the 4x2 should be the minimum size. So they were kind of like the pioneers in getting these custom made enclosures to the public and kind of making them a little more mass produced, where before people would put them in just 40 gallons because they didn't know where to get a 4x2.
Right, right. I mean, that's how I had all my snakes in 40 gallons. Because I just thought those were unobtainable for someone like me, just because one, because of the price, but two, just shipping. I was like, yeah. I can imagine how expensive it would be to ship one of those 4x2x2 enclosures. And then I realized, I think I saw them, I don't remember. I saw somebody at a reptile expo and they were showing like, well, no, they pretty much, we send them to you and then you assemble them. And I was like, oh, that would make it. I was shocked when I got just like this big long rectangle box.
Yeah, you don't get this giant thing.
And it was really easy to put together. And this has kind of turned into a impromptu advertisement for Zen Habitats. So I will go leave a link in the description. I think I've got an affiliate link for them. So it'll save you a little bit of money. So I think.
Yeah, there you go.
If not, I'll still leave a link in there for it. So you can check them out. But they're pretty cool. And yeah. And it's so I had Nick from, I forget the name, Galaxy Geckos or something. A few weeks ago, he was on the show talking about crested geckos. He's actually where I got my first crested gecko from. I'd always wanted one. Wiccans, Adam from Wiccans Wicked Reptiles was like really talking to me up and was really, you know, saying you should definitely get one. They're really easy species. And, you know, but as much as I wanted a crested gecko, a toke gecko always seemed more appealing to me as far as like aesthetically, the way it looked. And I was like heavily encouraged not to get a toke gecko. And so I was wondering what your opinion was on that. Like, I mean, why do you work so much with toke geckos? What do you like about them? And what are the drawbacks?
Oh, good stuff. Okay. So funny enough, I actually didn't like toke geckos. I kind of fed into a lot of the stereotype of them being just like a junkyard gecko, crazy little demons. You know, a lot of people talk bad about the tokes because they're, again, just like the reptile hobby. It's a misunderstood thing. But my wife has always been more into the feisty little things, right? So she really wanted one. And when your partner wants a reptile, you get that gecko or reptile. So that means you can get more reptiles. So we got it. And I kind of fell in love with the species. I realized that they're not what all the stereotypes are. They're a very intelligent gecko. Personally, in my opinion, I believe they are the most intelligent gecko that we can have here in captivity. And there's so many cool things about them. I think my favorite has to be the parental instincts that they have. So not only do the pairs will bond with each other, you can keep pairs together while breeding, and then the eggs, they maternally will incubate the eggs, and then they will actually take care of their young for at least the first 2 to 3 months before you removing them.
Interesting.
So, and as far as if I recommend them, they're a super hardy gecko. As far as like some of the species that are available, they're tanks. I mean, you see all these imports coming in; they're on death's door, but within 2 months, they're beefcakes, you know. It's just kind of the thing. The real drawback's going to be the personality of the gecko.
Yeah,
that just has to do with they are a more defensive animal, because I feel like they're a little more self-aware than, say, like your crested gecko, right?
Okay.
I like to call crested geckos, they look like they have two brain cells just knocking around in their head, not much going on up there, and so they're pretty okay with you just holding them because they don't really know. But I think tokes, they're a little more self-aware in that fact that we are these giants, man. I mean, we're huge. We're skyscrapers to these things. And that's a scary thing. And they get fearful. But you can definitely work them out. You can work around them. And I definitely don't think they're as bad as people make them out to be. I definitely think while they can be a little cantankerous and feisty, you're not going to put your hand in the cage and an animal's going to run out and bite you. They're most likely going to bark and then run away the entire time.
That's good to hear. You said they're most likely to bark? Like they bark? They make noises?
Yeah, they do. Actually, I have a video coming out talking about the toke bark here pretty soon. So toke geckos make noise. The reason why they're called toke geckos stems from when people go out in the wild, native where they're from, Indonesia, at night, their call sounds a lot like toke. It's like, toke, toke. And they kind of do that. So they have a bunch of those little noise. They have the mating call that you might be able to hear. They've been going crazy. Right now, they're all paired. And they also are able to bark. So like, and then they run away. It's the cutest little thing, man.
That's awesome. I did not know that. So they're from Indonesia. Are they are they protected or in danger or anything like that in the wild?
So they did just enter. It's either CITES 1 or CITES 2. I can't remember which one is the lesser. And then I believe it's CITES 2 and then CITES 1's the big one. I could be wrong. But they did just enter CITES. So there's a little bit more of a restriction on importation of them, which as a breeder, I like. I think these guys should be a lot more valuable than for $15. And that's going to really help the cause.
Yeah.
But I don't believe they're endangered. I know they're used heavily in the meat market over there because they're such a large gecko. So I've seen videos where they kind of like dehydrate geckos. So you can go to market stands and it's just these giant, 14-inch tokes put on a kebab. It's wild.
Oh, wow. That's pretty crazy. Yeah, I know that it seems like a lot of, whether we're talking reptiles or invertebrates, if it's coming from Indonesia, they're becoming more and more protected because it seems like just the environment over there is just being destroyed for urban sprawl and farming and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a shame. But it's good that you're breeding them in captivity, trying to, save them, from either being collected in the wild or just the species in general, if the habitat ends up being decimated. How easy or difficult are they to breed in captivity?
Are you familiar with like red-eyed crocodile skinks?
I've seen them. I think I've seen Diane from Reptiliatus.
Yeah,
Diane, he had a couple of videos on them. So I've seen them. But that's like my only exposure to them.
It's kind of the same thing. I think the hardest part with breeding them, you just got to set them up right. And then they kind of do the rest for you. So as long as you have that proper husbandry, you have a nice enclosure, has plenty of hideaways, they feel secure in it. They kind of take care of the whole process you put them in. I don't have it exactly dialed. I don't think tokes really have it dialed down. I think that has a lot to do with bonded pairs and pairs bonding. So I can get eggs if they like each other within 30 to 45 days of them. I've had females that just don't like the male. They don't want to bond with them. They kind of stay on separate sides of the enclosure. I've had animals that take like 6 to 7 months to lay me a clutch of eggs. But it's a very hands-off process. It's just a matter of making sure your animal's set to the proper weight and just seeing if they like each other at the end of the day.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned that you were you had a video that you're going to post about the toke barking and making noises. Now, are you posting that kind of stuff on Instagram Reels or you got a YouTube channel or, what's
your YouTube channel? Yeah. So I've been grinding out the YouTube. It's going to be a video all about display geckos. I'm trying to really break myself in the niche of the gecko guy on there. So
yeah.
A lot of gecko content over there. It's either geckos or it's really big lizards. There's no in between.
Yeah, I feel you there. So how long have you been doing YouTube?
July 2019. So coming up on 3 years now.
Oh, wow. It's a grind. I'll tell you that. Yeah. It's not much fun some days, but sometimes it's a lot of fun. So you're doing this. And I am assuming just from reading, different stuff online, but you're doing this full time, right? Breeding and stuff like that.
Yep. I've gone back picking up a little extra shifts just because I want to start changing out the way I keep things. So I'm doing a lot of tubs right now, which it's okay in the beginning, you're starting out, but as I've gone more and now I'm full time, I want my room and just the place I house my animals. I want it to look a little bit more professional, right? So I've been heading back to work, picking up some extra shifts just so I can get everything in PVC, make it just look a lot nicer than what it is right now.
Very cool. And what are some of the challenges? Because I get people a lot. And for me, it's mainly people that want to start a business breeding reptiles, or not reptiles, I'm sorry, breeding tarantulas and selling them. And it seems like there's this constant, and I'm sure it's different with reptiles, of course, but it seems like that, you know, you get these, you get into the tarantula hobby, you find, you see that they're charging anywhere from $10 to $500 for these spiderlings, depending on the species. And they're pretty easy to take care of and house and things of that nature. So you have a lot of people that maybe within their first couple of years of keeping tarantulas, have this bright idea that, you know, I enjoy this. This is something that I love and I'm interested in. I'm going to start breeding them and selling them and start a business. And then like 6 months after they launch their business, it folds because they're like, whoa, that was way too much work. I wasn't prepared. You know, we're just dealing with the customer service and the shipping and weather and refunds and, you know, and then just the care and maintenance of, you know, taking care of dozens or hundreds or thousands of hungry mouths to feed. So what are some of the challenges that you've come across since you've begun this journey?
Yeah, for sure. So I started this journey in 2020. I feel like I'm fighting an uphill battle just because I started a little early. Obviously, with COVID in 2020, I got laid off of my position. And I just kind of never went back to work after that. I just started grinding the business. And we're starting to get pretty good right now. But for the past couple of years, it's been a real grind and hustle. Yeah. I honestly think if you want to create a business, reptile breeding is probably the worst business model you could ever get into. Not only does your stock just eat your profits, we're talking feeding babies, electricity, housing. People, all they see is this, you know, I mean, I can sell geckos for 3, 4, 5. I mean, I have animals that can go into the 4 digits, you know, 1,000, 2,000. People are seeing that. They're like, oh man, this guy's rich. No, dude, I'm barely breaking even over here. Like I'm struggling right now. We're on the line. You know what I'm saying? But there's good times of the year. And then we get more towards winter and then it becomes bad times.
Yeah, so
I think for anyone that wants to start a reptile business, I think anyone can do it. I think you have to have some sort of a business sense, but there's YouTube. I don't think it's honestly rocket science for reptile breeding. Hit social media, get good at social media. You'll be able to sell your animals. I think the hardest part is just being able to grind and live in that frozen waffle and ramen cup days, months to years. That's really what it takes. Just being stubborn enough to keep going. I think that's honestly why a lot of businesses fail in this industry is because they start suffering. They start going into the negative a bit and they don't push forward. They just kind of close their cases. So I think that's what we did. We struggled for a long time. And then now finally we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're starting to kind of get back on our feet and start making this into a real thing.
That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah, you say get good at social media, like that's easy.
Oh no.
All I can do is just get good at social media. It's like,
bro, just
people go to 100,000
subscribers,
for years.
You're good to go.
And real quick, I want to thank the sponsor of today's podcast, and that is Arthropod Ambassadors. Now, if you're not familiar with them, they take a unique look at our tiny neighbors that wear their bones on their skin. They aim to spark interest in bugs and support the well-being of arthropods in our backyard and around the world. They're spreading this educational inspiration through Arthropod Art, the mobile bug zoo, informational YouTube videos, and invertebrate hobby networking. They also work with edible insects, specimen preservation, pest management, and beekeeping. From compost-enhancing roly-polies and alien-like top predator mantises, to the honeybee alchemist we partnered with long ago. Arthropods come in all shapes and sizes and are waiting to teach us more about the earth that we all have in common. If you're interested in becoming more familiar with mantises, jumping spiders, assassin bugs, roaches, or a variety of other critters, head over to arthropodambassadors.com and check out their content on which species they have available. You can also find a collection of videos covering nature walks, pet mantises, resin art, and other invertebrates on their YouTube channel, also called Arthropod Ambassadors. And you can follow them on Instagram to stay updated on new educational content or species that they may have available in the future. So a huge thanks to Arthropod Ambassadors for sponsoring this podcast. And I will leave a link down below in the show notes so you can check out their website and all their other social media. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, people ask me all the time, for advice on how they can grow their Instagram or their YouTube. And I'm like, I'm still trying to figure it out myself. Like, I can send you to some resources that I use as far as like YouTube channels that are focused on that, but it's still, I mean, it's like trying to hit a moving target. Like you think you figure something out and you're like, okay, I got a good pattern. This is putting in you know, I'm putting in the effort and people are responding. It's, I'm getting followers. And then they change the algorithm slightly. And then it's like, that doesn't work anymore at all. Especially with Instagram. That thing is, I loved Instagram years ago. And now it's a pain in the ass, really. Because it's like, you know, it's you want to post a picture?
It's Walmart TikTok right now.
Yeah. And YouTube's trying to do the same thing. I'm like, come on, guys. You know, don't try to fix something that isn't broken. You guys are like, you're doing great. Why are you trying to take over TikTok now? But
yeah, I refuse to do YouTube shorts. I think I have like 7 on there. I think they're so dumb. Yeah. But Reels for Instagram, I mean, I've been growing crazy fast with Reels. I mean, we're talking like zero effort. I put a hard-boiled egg with my tea and we started eating it. And I just filmed it on my cell phone for 10 seconds, posted it up, 2,000 views. It's crazy right now with Instagram. But YouTube, I can't figure out YouTube, man. I think I have 517, you know, like videos I edited nice. I spent, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours on them. 18,000 subs. I don't know, man. But yeah, with the algorithm, you're absolutely right, man. I'm kind of in that down slope right now. Something changed and now I got to, you know, it's a constant evolve and adapting scenario on YouTube, it seems.
It is. Yeah. I mean, 18,000 subscribers is nothing to, you know, sleep on. That's a good following
for
especially the niche that we're in. And, you know, I know a lot of people that have been doing it for a long time that still haven't broke 1,000 or 10,000. So, I mean, you get past 10,000, you're on the right path for sure. But there's, you know, the issue with the YouTube shorts, like I just took a month in January because that's typically when you get the least amount of views on YouTube. And also advertisers are paying the least amount because they just blew all their budget for Christmas. So, you know, it's like if you're going to take a time, some like a little vacation or a break, that January is the time to do it. But I used that time to focus on Reel or YouTube Shorts because they were like emailing me every day, like trying to incentivize to do these shorts. And I'm like, I'm not going to do it. And I was like, all right. And then I saw some other people that I, you know, with similar channels blow up because of shorts. Like they posted a couple of shorts and got millions of views, and which translated to thousands of or tens of thousands of subscribers. So I was like, I'll try it out, and was just posting one a day for a month straight. And I mean, I think I gained some subscribers, but I also lost some subscribers. So at the end, it was like a net gain of maybe 10 people. And I pissed off a lot of people. They were like, we're sick of getting notifications every day for a 50-second video, I guess.
Well, that's my whole thing and why I really don't like shorts is you can grow on it for sure, right? Like people click on it, you might get subscribers, but those people only know you for your shorts. So how is that going to translate into people watching your long form content, right? Like I have people on I've subscribed to on shorts. I only watch their shorts. I don't want to watch their long form content. It's a weird, there's no rhyme or reason. That's just how I feel. I don't want to watch them for 10 minutes. I want to watch them for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So I feel like it would almost not be good for the channel because when YouTube serves up to those subscribers that only watch your shorts and they show up your long form content, they're not going to click on it because they don't really care that much. So that, I was kind of on that standpoint where I didn't really want to do it just for that reason.
Yeah, it's kind of like that whole quantity versus quality debate.
Exactly. Like,
you know, you could put a whole lot out, you could get a lot of views and a lot of subscribers from it, but they're not quality subscribers that are going to be watching all of your videos that are, you know, more quality. So yeah, I transitioned and now I just post shorts on because I've got two channels. So I got one for like the Tarantula Collective content and then one that I put these podcasts on. And, you know, so people on YouTube that maybe don't use Spotify or Apple Podcasts can listen. And I post shorts on there. So it's just like you either get a 2-hour video or a 45-second video. It's kind of like stuff that doesn't fit on the main channel. I just dump it all onto the Exotic Pet Collective.
I started a shorts channel, but I think I just eventually gave up on it. Shorts are weird, man. You either get 23 views or you get thousands of views. There's no like, I don't have a video with like, oh, it has 375. It's either big or it's not.
Yeah. And I've tried it on TikTok as well. And like, I'll post the exact same video, same hashtags and description and you know, one on TikTok, one on Instagram Reels and like within seconds of each other. And I'll get 5, 10,000 views, sometimes 20 or 30,000 views on Instagram. And I still haven't broke 1,000 views on TikTok. So I'm just like, I just don't understand why there's such a big difference. But it's to the point I'm like, I don't even want to deal with TikTok anymore.
I found the science of TikTok. Let an animal bite you and make a funny noise. Good to go. I think those are, I have like 3 videos with 1 million views, and it was literally just a 10-second clip of a video of a toke biting me or my tegu biting me.
Yeah.
Boom, good to go. You'll get a lot of hate by 14-year-olds, but you do it.
I'm going to try that with a tarantula. Not let the tarantula bite me, but just act. I don't know. I'd make a weird noise holding a tarantula. Let see what
defense
happens.
Defense posture and be like, whoa, boom, 1 million views. It's not good for the hobby.
No. Yeah, it's like that's the battle I have doing YouTube videos is that, like, I mean, especially just right now, like weeks and weeks, I was putting out videos that were more educational, you know, like a video on like how to research tarantula care or how to rehouse a tarantula, you know, like kind of how-to videos like that, that really are only going to be in, you know, people that will find it interesting are people that keep tarantulas. So it was like, and I was spending a lot of time working on these videos, researching and filming and editing and putting them out there. And they were just flopping. And those types of videos do better long-term. You know, it's like, they're not going to do great out of the bat because
it's like that evergreen content. It just keeps going.
Yeah. People are going to read the title and be like, that sounds boring. I don't want to watch it. But over time, those views come from like Google search or people are like, you know, so it's like, it'll be a long-term steady performer, but initially it just wasn't getting any views. And I was really starting to get frustrated. And especially when, you know, I see some of my friends doing the same thing, posting videos that are getting tens or hundreds of thousands of views within the first week, and mines are barely breaking, you know, a couple thousand. And I'm like, oh, this sucks. I'm about ready to quit, throw in the towel. Then I was like, well, I'll do a top 10 video. Those always seem to do well. And people request a lot. Like they want to see the most venomous spiders, you know, that kind of like sensational stuff. So I was like, I'm going to do that. But I'm going to do a spin on it because there's dozens of, or maybe even more than that, you know, top 10 most venomous or most deadly or most dangerous spiders out there. So I was like, I'm going to pretty much use the same type of thumbnail and titles and just language to kind of like draw in that like sensationalized crowd. But then even maybe like sensationalize the first part of discussing this spider, but then always end it on a positive note, like, it's actually really not that harmful to humans because they, you know, they will very rarely ever bite you. And if they do bite you, it's because you were doing something to piss them off. So it's like tricking people, making them think it's going to be sensationalized content. And they watch it and like, oh, this has actually got a little educational. So far it's been doing well. And it's like, yeah, but I can't do that every week because people are going to catch on and be like, he's tricking me. I'm going to click on this thinking he's going to get bit by a spider. And really he's just going to sit there and talk to me about how safe they are. But yeah. So
yeah,
So when I got way off track. I apologize.
No worries. I think with sensationalism and YouTube, especially with like animal industry, it's that hard line between ethical and educational and getting the views, right? Because like you said, the education doesn't do that well. Sometimes you got to add some sensationalism there to get the crowd going. So it's this weird line that we have to draw as YouTubers that I don't think other YouTubers really have to do, at least in not the capacity. I feel like there's a lot of eyes, you know, like you get judged very harshly with animal YouTube. And if you're doing anything wrong, or if you're going a little too pushing the envelope a little too much, you're going to get put in check. So that, like, it's that thin line of like getting people to click on it, but you can't be too bad or else you're going to get called out and then people are going to hate you. It's a weird thing.
It is. And even if you're being really reserved and doing no sensationalized content, you're still going to get people that disagree with the way you're keeping them or the way you're treating them. And I'm like, that's not how I do it. You're a terrible keeper. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like it seems maybe it's just an issue with social media, but especially in like the reptile and exotic pet hobby, that there's this like solipsistic kind of mindset where people are being like, the way that I see things, the way I do things is universally representative. So I like, if this is how I keep my snake, everybody should keep their snake that way. And if they don't, they're a bad keeper. And it's like,
Facebook groups.
Yeah. It's like, there's more than one way to skin a cat, guys. Like, so I don't know.
For sure. I think people just dog on you to dog on you. I was talking about this video where I just moved my adult male Argus monitor into, it's pretty much, I think it's like double the size of his old enclosure. It's like 10x4x6 or something along those lines. And someone commented and they're like, that's way too small. It's like, he's like 4.5 feet. What are you talking about? It's too small. Like you see this animal, it's like this with this much room to walk around. people just crap on you. That's just the thing.
That's true. Because I put a video out about a month or so ago about my king snake enclosure and the build that I did. And there was a couple of people in the comments, one guy in particular, I assume he's a guy, just railing on me, pretty much saying that was a waste of space and time and money. Like, your king snake isn't good. Because I had like branches and stuff for it to crawl around on. And I mean, I didn't make that up. I observed this thing for a few years and saw how she acted and how she interacted with her enclosure. And she really seemed to enjoy climbing. So I was like, when I build this, I want to put in a lot of elevated kind of branches and shelves so that she could do that a lot easier and really stretch out. And I was just like, you know, essentially just saying that that type of snake would do much better in either a 40 gallon or in like a tub on a rack.
Needs to be in a rack system. Yeah. Don't you know all snakes, rat systems.
I like seeing my snakes though.
Yeah, that's the number one thing I hate about tubs. It gives the adequate amount of space, but it's almost like a fogged, right? With the plastic, it's not clear. And I don't like that, especially now that, you know, we're spending some money over here. We're getting some really pretty things. I want to see my pretty things, you know? That's one thing. I did ball pythons for a year. I got hooked into the whole craze of the money you're going to be making, you know, and all that. And I was like, throw my hat in the ring. I love genetics. Didn't have a good time with it.
No.
Yeah, I don't like the live feeding they have to do with some of them, getting the baby started and not seeing them. You know, I spent $1,500 on this 5-gene neon yellow, incredible snake. And it's, you have to pull it out of a shelf to see it. I didn't have a good time with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure if you're breeding or you've got like a large facility, that's definitely the best way to go for both you and the snake, but
it's like the most economical way to go. It's a necessity, right? Like, I know there are people saying rat systems are awful, and I'm not saying you shouldn't use rat systems. I think they have a place, right? But there are people that are just like totally against it. It's animal neglect, and it's not the case. These animals wouldn't be eating, drinking, and breeding if it was a neglect case. They wouldn't look as nice as they did, right? But if this was the case where we like ban rack systems, now all these ball pythons need 4x2s or 40 gallons, right? I mean, there's going to be a significant drought of ball pythons, and those snakes are then going to be $600, $700, $800, $900 for normals. Someone wants to keep a bunch of snakes. You're not going to be able to do it any type of quantity, right? If you're using these giant, large enclosures.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a personal thing for me. Whether it's
for sure
spiders or snakes or geckos, I like seeing them. I like feeling like this is a little private zoo or something. You know, I can come down and, I mean, I enjoy just sitting down here, you know, listening to some music and drinking some coffee or something and just observing. And so if it's something that's hidden away in a, you know, opaque enclosure, it kind of, I mean, what's the purpose? Unless I'm, you know, and I don't do breeding though. So that's probably, you know, a little bit different than some other people's kind of mindset, I guess.
And yeah, I'm starting to see the same way, right? Is like, I kind of want to see my animals now. Like, I've got this room that we've decked out, you know, we've got all the PVC, Zen Habitats, you know, a little planted chameleon cage behind me. I kind of want to do that with the breeding room as well. And be able to walk in and like, just being able to see each individual animal, I think would be really cool. So that's something we're definitely gearing towards. We're trying to get away from tubs and into more display type enclosures.
Yeah. I mean, aesthetically, I enjoy that a lot. So you're breeding tokay geckos. I also saw, at least on your Instagram, it was saying you work with day geckos as well. Yeah. I have one, and I probably got it in the worst possible way you could get a day gecko. I was at the pet store. I think it was Petco or something like that with my kid buying crickets, and they had, what are they called? A giant day gecko, maybe giant gold day gecko. I don't remember exactly. No scientific name, nothing like that. And it was like 75% off. And it was just like, that's a really, I mean, I think it cost like 15 or 20 bucks or something.
I was going to say, it's got to be like a $5 gecko at that point.
Like, I don't even know what they normally cost, but it was really cheap. And I had an enclosure that would work. You know, I had been thinking about it, getting one for a while. I saw some at NARBC and was like, those things are beautiful. And just because of what I do, I just have a garage full of empty enclosures in different, you know, levels of disrepair. So I was like, I know I've got a few that would probably work where I can mix and match and put something together. So we brought it home and she's been thriving ever since. But she does this weird thing, and maybe this is something a lot of reptiles do, but I mean, I've had her for a few years now, maybe three, maybe you come somewhere between 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I've never bred her, but she keeps dropping eggs. It's like, I'm like, well, why would you do that? So, I mean, are they a simple, animal to breed, or are they pretty difficult in captivity?
So I'm probably not the best. So I just started my journey with, geckos. So like I said, last year I was doing the ball pythons, and then, throughout the fall, I actually sold off the entire collection and, really started my journey into geckos. So during the fall, we got the Madagascan giant days, the crimson line day geckos, and a trio of, standing eyes. So this is only my first year doing it, so I don't have too much of that knowledge behind it, right? But from what I can see, it's pretty simple. I mean, yeah. They breed, they drop me. It's amazing. They drop me eggs in the same spot. I've got this little mushroom cup, food cup thing, right? They go right underneath,
yeah.
Right, it's right in the corner. So I can just walk in, look in the corner. There are my eggs, and I take them out. It's a pretty cool thing.
That. I don't know if you can see it. That's her enclosure right there. And she's actually, you definitely can't see her. That like little black shadow right there.
Yeah.
That is her. But you can see that there's like this little line right there. And
that's the poop.
Yeah. So she'll poop, but that's also exactly where she'll drop an egg.
Like, oh, fantastic.
Yeah. I'm just like, why do you, and it's not like a lot, it's not excessive or anything, but every time I see it, I panic for a minute. I'm like, oh my God, what is that? And then I'm like, oh, it's a reptile egg. All right.
It's the biggest urate I've ever seen.
but they're really cool, but she is so skittish. I mean, are all your day geckos really skittish?
No, it's awesome. So again, that negative stereotype of them being like super flight. And my standing eyes are a lot like that. I have a girl that, whenever I enter the enclosure, immediately goes. But my pair, man, I don't know. Maybe I got it from a good guy that was doing everything right. But I can go in there. I don't need to worry about them running out. I, give them little chin scratches, feed them little worms without any problems. I had a one time. So the mushroom cup thing is kind of right next to the door, and I guess a branch must have like fallen a little bit, so it knocked that forward. Well, the door didn't get locked one night.
Oh, so no.
I walk in and it's ajar, and I see these two geckos on the wall. And I remember I have some other people I've talked about the day geckos before getting them. And one of my friends, she has one that's been out for months because she can't catch the thing. So she just leaves food out in her reptile room and it eats it, and she just can't catch it. So I'm thinking, oh man, this is just a free ranging day. But no, I had a little paper towel roll. So I'm like, you know, on the ceiling, they hopped down and hopped on my arm, and I was able to kind of brush them back in. And even with, we have some babies now, I believe we're up to 2 or 3 babies for this year. And they're chill. I can't touch them yet, but I can open the little enclosure, mist them. They don't like get spastic. They kind of just watch me. I find that's the coolest thing about the day geckos. They're so like inquisitive, at least for me. They just love watching me. It's a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely is interested in what I'm doing. She'll sit on her little branch. I've kind of got like a piece of bamboo that kind of goes like this underneath the whatever that deep heat thing is. So she'll bask there and just watch me as I'm walking around, either filming a video or feeding tarantulas or something. Just she keeps her eye on me, which is always cool. And I've gotten her to where she'll tong feed now. Like it used to be, I opened up the enclosure, and as soon as I kind of crossed that barrier, she would bolt into, you know, whatever little hiding place that she felt the most secure. Now she'll hang out, let me mess around in there without running around like crazy. And I've gotten to where I can, you know, put a cricket or a worm or something on the end of the tongs and feed it to her. Sometimes she's like, I'm not hungry, leave me alone. But as far as like, if I try to touch her or, you know, anything like that, they have such sensitive skin, you know. I was watching something that they actually will shed their skin to try to get away from you. And
yeah, not only are they able to, so like with crested geckos, they can drop their tail, but it's just one part that's able to release. Whereas day geckos, they have multiple of that. So I had one where I was moving my crimson line from their quarantine setup to their new setup, and he dropped like maybe 10% of the tail at the very back where the end is.
Yeah.
And not only can they do that, but they can also drop individual scales. They can like, shed them right off to get away. So yeah. I think that's the biggest negative. People hear that and they're like, I don't want a day gecko. But I think everyone should have a day gecko. They're an amazing species.
I've just been respectful, giving her space and use like cups and stuff when I'm moving her from one enclosure to the other. And she hasn't, you know, dropped any scales or anything like that. Her tail's still intact. You know, it's just, I don't know. I'm not saying like I want to be able to take her out and handle her or anything. I just wish she wasn't so scared of me. Like trying to warm her up, but she's very cool. And I had a similar experience. I had switched out her, you know, I had fed her and I shut the door, but for whatever reason, I don't know if I was going to go back to mist or something and forgot, but I didn't latch it. And I came down the next morning and I could see the door was slightly opened. And I was like, oh no. But she was like literally just sitting right on top of the enclosure. She's like, she just crawled out and perched up there and was just hanging out. And I was like, how am I going to get her back in? And that was my biggest fear too, just because I've got so many enclosures down here and there's like a lot of little nooks and crannies, you know? So if something gets out, I can almost guarantee it'll be pretty difficult to catch if it gets in one of these closets or, you know, like holes in the wall that go to the other side of the basement, which is more of like a garage where it's just random stuff everywhere. So it's like, spider gets loose and gets over on that part of the house, like it would be really difficult to find. So a day gecko would be just probably even more difficult just because of the rafters and stuff. But I just kind of like, you know, moved my hand towards her. She ran right back inside. And I was like, all right, cool.
There you go. That's a cool thing with like geckos. You don't exactly have to grab them. You kind of just almost like a force field, right? Kind of just keep them going back until they get back into the setup.
Yeah. They're really cool. And they're just gorgeous. I just love watching her do her thing. I've got those and the crested geckos. I saw on Morph Market you had a few crested geckos available for sale. Is that where you do most of your retail, or do you like do expos and things of that nature?
So social media has been so kind to me that I've actually never run an expo. And we are doing one this year. We're hitting up the Mr. Drew and His Animals 2 Expo over in Maine. This will be the first one we'll be going to, but I've done most of my sales just YouTube, Facebook, and, Instagram, not Facebook because Facebook doesn't allow animal sales. So yeah, we're definitely not doing that, but, we just actually started the Morph Market, a couple months ago, just because I think we're looking at 100 to 150 animals this year. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a leap than what we've been doing the past couple of years. I don't think I can be able to sell everything and post everything on the Facebook and Instagram. Morph Market's just that nice place where people are interested in my animals. Don't just scroll through pictures of my, you know, other animals. It's right there. There's the price. There's the info. They don't have to ask me 5 or 6 questions before deciding they don't want it. You know, it's just all right there for the person.
Yeah. It seems like a pretty cool marketplace they've got going there. And that's, I've always been curious about people that are selling, you know, their animals on Instagram, because I've seen other people do other types of things, not with animals. Like I know one guy I follow custom makes pocket knives and we'll sell them, sometimes auction them off on Instagram or we're selling that way. And it just seems like a lot of work, you know, just you're dealing with a lot of questions, you're reading comments, you're trying to keep people updated. Okay, now this one's sold, no longer available. So, I mean, in those situations, like, say you make a post, I got this gecko, these are its genetics or its morph or however you kind of differentiate one from another. This is the price, it's available for sale. So when it sells, do you take that picture down? Like, do you delete it and then like lose all those likes and engagement, or do you leave it up and just kind of, anybody that shows interest, you just direct them to a different animal?
I kind of do the used car salesman thing where, you know, the post just stays up. I'll usually put a comment down or I'll edit the post. I edit the caption of the post. We'll do like little asterisks and say sold or no longer for sale, on hold, whatever it is. So it's not too car salesman-y, you know, when you're looking for that, you know, 2005 Mustang at the car lot. Oh, we sold that 8 months ago, but check out this Saab or whatever.
Yeah. I was always wondering about that because it's not like, you know, you're selling t-shirts or something where you can have hundreds of them and they sell out and you can order more, you know, put them on backward or something. When you're doing custom made knives or live animals, it's kind of usually like a one and done, like I've got this one available. So when you're doing crested geckos, I think I saw maybe 2 or 3 that you had on Morph Market. And they were like around $100 to $200.
Yeah, those are 2021 stock that didn't sell, or because I'm in New England, usually around the December area, it's too cold to ship. And so some of those late hatches in the, you know, August to September, they're not going to make that cut. So they're usually just held back until spring when it opens back up.
Gotcha. Now, how difficult is, like, I know you said you like genetics and you were into ball python breeding for a while. And it seems like there are a lot of insane morphs for crested geckos. Is it similar as far as, like, you know, trace? I really don't know anything about genetics. I'm not even going to try to sound like I do, but how difficult is it to breed geckos to, like, kind of bring out certain aspects or qualities?
So it really depends on if we're talking like polygenic animals. So crested geckos do fit that polymorphic or polygenic. I'm going to sound like a jackass. I don't know all the scientific words. gargoyles, things like that. Yeah. It's not going to follow the Mendelian genetics. So when we're talking about codominant, incomplete dominant, recessive. So like with my Tokay geckos, if I pair my reduced pattern to a normal, because that's a incomplete dominant mutation of reduced pattern, 50% is always going to be typically going to be that reduced pattern gene or the normal gene, right? Same with recessive. I have an idea of what everything's going to look like. But when we're talking about the polygenetic animals like crested geckos, you can kind of get anything. It's why I'm not too heavy into the morph game with crested geckos. I stick with that Dalmatian niche. I know everything's going to have spots. You're not going to produce an animal that won't have spots because the Dalmatian gene is a dominant part in that. But so I don't know too much. I know we're getting some of these animals now, like Exanthic, Lily White. It's like Cappuccino or Espresso. It's some weird new morph that's actually creating melanistic crested geckos. Those kind of follow that trait, but a lot of it is also like polygenic. So you kind of, a lot of it has to do with lineage as well. That's really the best part with crested geckos. If you know who the parents, the grandparents, the great-grandparents are, you're going to have a much better idea of what those babies are going to look like versus if you go to that pet store, get a nice-looking gecko. Maybe that nice-looking gecko was just a one-off from two bad-looking crested geckos, and now you're going to get some, you know, quote-unquote ugly geckos.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they pretty easy to work with? I mean, as far as like... Yeah, I know their care is easy, but I've always wondered, you know, how difficult are they to breed and the young to kind of raise up?
No. It's one of those geckos. Everyone and their grandma can do it, which is why it's such a saturated field. I mean, I'm not knocking anyone for wanting to do their breeding, but you get a lot of the younger crowd, you know, the 14, 15, 16-year-olds doing it. And when you're that age, you don't know the market, right? You don't understand that. So they're then selling those animals for 40, 50 bucks, and it kind of drops the whole thing because you can just go, because they're kind of, you know, one in the same. You can't really, a lot of people aren't going to know about the lineage, the structure of the animal. They kind of just want a cute gecko. It's a very popular pet, right? So that's one of the downsides, is just the ease of breeding. I mean, you put a male and female together, you're not really going to have any scraps. They're not a very aggressive breeder like some of these other New Caledonian species. They're pretty frequent with eggs. They're very prolific. You're going to get somewhere around that 10 to 14 eggs. They usually lay around that starting from the beginning of the season to usually around fall. Mm-hmm. It's a very easy, probably one of the easiest geckos I breed over here.
It's interesting when I talk to people like you that are in the reptile and amphibian game, and you talk about these new breeders coming up, or inexperienced breeders, or, you know, just people that aren't plugged in directly or have a long history, and they're flooding the market with species and driving the price down. And it, long-term, overall, that could be detrimental, because if there's not a profit in it, a lot of the more seasoned breeders are going to be like, I'm losing money in this. I probably need to find something else to do. And then they, you know, it starts drying up, you know, I mean, not immediately, but over 5, 10, 20 years, in the tarantula hobby, it's kind of the opposite. Instead of people complaining about, new people throwing, you know, species on the market and undercutting everybody else, they're more upset that at the price people are charging, like, well, that's way too much. It's like, then don't buy it. Like, I don't know what to tell you if you think that tarantula they're charging $200 for is only worth $100, then you know, don't buy it. And if nobody buys it, then eventually they'll drop the price. But it always blows my mind when people are, you know, complaining about prices And that in one hobby, they're like, oh, this shit's too expensive. And then another hobby, like, oh, they're selling it for too cheap.
I find that with the Dart Frog community too. I listen to some podcasts with Dart Frog people and they're like, the price is the same it's been in the 80s. If you try to charge more, people get super upset with you.
Oh, geez.
So it's kind of the same thing. I don't know. It's a back and forth with reptiles, you know, like you can't dog people that, you know, are interested in breeding and interested in those games. I had my friend Logan who started getting into it. You know, he wanted to start breeding tokays and he was a newbie. He had no idea. You know, he's just getting into it. But now years later, you know, the man's spending $10,000 on his enclosures in his room and he's got more genetics than even I'm working with anymore. So you never know who's going to be the next big breeder in your little niche. But at the same time, you know, when you are full time in this and you kind of depend on this money to pay your bills, keep everything going, keep all your animals fed, it's kind of annoying when you're selling your animals for $200 and people are going to the $40 guy because it's a cheaper animal. But then coming to you for your knowledge and questions when something goes wrong, what the mutation is, you know, what's this and this? Am I doing this right? And it's like, I want to be a good guy, but I'm a little upset.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be very frustrating. They want the juice, but not the squeeze, I guess, is a way to say, like, I don't want to pay you for your animals, but I want all of your expertise for free.
Exactly. And as I've grown in this, it's the kind of thing where I've kind of had to take that step back of answering every single question about every single animal that's not my guy. I'm just getting too many messages at this point, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of sucks. I like helping people. I like making sure, you know, people's animals are good, but it's starting to become a thing. Well, I need to make sure the animals I produce and sell, those customers are taken care of versus just someone who's seen me off of YouTube, Instagram, whatever it is.
Yeah. Some guy got mad at me the other day because I asked a question on an Instagram post about something I had recently made a video about in detail. And I was like, oh, well, I talk about that in this video. Check it out. And he was like, no, I just want you to answer right now in the comments. I don't want to go to YouTube and watch it. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, I spent a lot of time on that. And it's much easier for you to watch that video than for me to type all of this out. And I don't even know who you are. And it was pretty much like, well, if this is your attitude, I'm not going to go watch it because I don't want to give you the monetization.
It's I want to give you those 3 pennies.
It's not even that. It's 0.003 for your view. That's what I get. Like 0.03 of a penny. Whatever it is. Maybe it's 0.03 or something. I don't know.
That's got to be like the worst brutal. Diss. He's in his mind, you are not worth 0.03 of a penny. Yeah. That's harsh, man.
Yeah. It's like, well, that's how you feel. Then I'm definitely not going to answer. It's like, I don't know. But you get that a lot. I think it's similar to what, you know, the kind of issues you deal with. People see what you're charging for reptiles and I'm like, oh, this guy must be, you know, swimming in cash. People see like, oh, you've got 100,000 subscribers. You must be like, you know, driving a new Tesla and living high on the hog. It's like, no, it pays really poorly.
No, it's not. It's not good. I know most of the YouTube game, a lot of the money comes from sponsorships. Mm-hmm. I haven't hit that sponsorship area yet where a lot of people still want to do that affiliate marketing type stuff. No one wants to pay old Dakota to make an ad for his video. They're like, well, if you sell stuff, we'll pay you, you know, 5%. And I'm like, that's like $3. Let me get right on that.
Yeah. I've got a couple of them. And it's not even like the affiliate link doesn't even pay cash. It's like, we'll give you store credit, like 10% of your sales in store credit. It's like, I don't want to buy anything. Like everything you have for sale that I want, I've already purchased. So like, what do I do with all this store credit? But
in some cases it's cool. Like if I like Josh's Frogs, I did an ad for Josh's Frogs. They gave me credit for their store. I use their store very frequently. So that was nice. Cool. And you get some cool stuff. Like, I got a jewelry company that is doing animal stuff. We're going to get some new necklaces and stuff. And they're like high quality, expensive necklace. So, you know, I'll take an expensive necklace and run a little ad, but there's some stuff where it's like, I have like grow tent companies that are like, we'll give you lights and these free fabric pots. I'm like, I don't do that. I don't think you're understanding what I'm telling you. No, we keep reptiles in grow tents. I'm not growing stuff in the grow tents.
That's funny. Yeah. I've actually reached out to Josh's Frogs and tried to work out a deal with them and they pretty much were like, thank you, but no thank you. we have no interest in working with you. I mean, they sent me some tarantulas.
They just wanted to do a one-off for me. It was just like, we're not looking for sponsorships, but, you know, here's some credit. Make a video about us. I'm like,
yeah,
fair enough. Cool. I need some food.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they sent me some tarantulas to unbox and made a video on that. And I was like, that went well. How about we do something where I get like a 10% affiliate link, or do you want to pay to run an ad in a video? And they're just like, no, we're good. It's like, all right, I can respect that. But then I get hit up every day from random people. I have no idea who they are, offering me thousands of dollars to run a commercial for their NFT. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
I got the same NFT. They're like, we'll give you $2,000. I'm like, well, number one, this is a scam. Number two, I don't know anything about NFTs.
Yeah. And even if it wasn't a scam, you actually gave me that money. You may not be scamming me, but you're going to scam every one of my viewers that ends up clicking the link and putting money into whatever piece of crap you're trying to sell. So it's like, and then I get a lot of requests from like Italy and Germany, like these like small clothing brands that for some reason think they're like, we watched your channel. It'd be a great fit. I'm like, this is total form email that you've sent to every YouTube channel you came across. Like you just, you know, web crawled or something, scraped for a bunch of email addresses off YouTube channels and are mass sending these emails. Like if you knew what I was doing or who I was, like you wouldn't be offering me super ultra hip, extremely tight, fashionable Italian clothing.
Oh, you got to do it. It would just be hilarious at that point. Like make sure to get one size smaller than what you are. So it is really.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, the one of them that I've been pushing for over a year now is I really just want to get a partnership with a business that sells feeders, you know? So it's like, I just hate buying crickets and buying roaches. It's like, we could have a symbiotic relationship here. You provide all the feeders I need. I provide you with a constant source of advertisement, but
you should, have you hit up Rainbow Mealworms?
I have, they declined. I can't remember why, but
really?
they just said like they were, I think it was because they were having stock issues or something, or I don't remember. They were just
I used to use Rainbow Mealworms, but back with COVID, I actually switched to Josh's Frogs because they couldn't fulfill the amount of, insect feeders that I need.
Yeah. I mean, they were really complimentary.
I would hit them back up. I almost had a deal with them, but their thing was they wanted 10,000 followers on Instagram, which I have TikTok and YouTube are above that, but I don't really work Instagram as hard. Mm. So they were like, no. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make much sense, but okay. Yeah. I respect your decision.
Yeah. I mean, when they responded, they were really complimentary. I'm like, yeah, we watch your videos and stuff. It just... we're not doing any more advertising right now because we're having a hard enough time keeping up with the orders that we have. And I was like, all right, that's cool. And I've reached out to some other people and it just, I don't know. It just never seems to really work out. And I think a part of it is just because I'm not a reptile guy. I think like that kind of genre is much, there's a lot more people that keep reptiles than keep tarantulas. So I think from a business standpoint, they're like, the majority of our customers are reptile keepers, not spider keepers. So, but it's also like, that just means it's an untapped market, man.
I think a big thing is, you know, I don't think feeders will ever struggle, you know? I mean, it's no matter what you're keeping, tarantulas, frogs, reptiles, you need bugs. So I think it's one of those things, it's a little harder to get into just because they don't really need that advertising because people always go to them for the bugs, you know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, you just kind of put up a sign that says selling crickets and you got a line of people who are like, oh,
good to go. I mean, I could go online right now and say I'm selling dubia roaches. I'll get 7 emails.
Yeah. I just hate going because like where I am, I don't know what kind of town you live in, but it's small. And we've got like a Petco and a Pet Supplies Plus, which are like the two big chain pet stores in this area. But they're like, I mean, I go to Pittsburgh or Washington, Pennsylvania, or Cincinnati or Columbus. And I go to their Petco and it's a lot nicer than the one here. You know what I mean? Yeah. They've got a lot better selection for, I mean, pretty much everything. And somehow they're about the same size, but like their reptile department is just stocked with a whole lot of bioactive stuff. And
they have those cool, like, these fancy, like fake rock stuff. It looks very, it's not just the cages that are put in the little racks type shelving system.
Right. So it's frustrating. And then they charge an arm and a leg for crickets. Yeah. And it's like, this is highway robbery. Now I've done it enough that there are a few people there that know me and that I'm a good repeat customer. So like I'll order 100 crickets and they'll send me home with like 500 crickets, but it doesn't always happen. And sometimes it's like, I really don't, like, I'm not going to be able to keep these things alive long enough to feed them all off. But yeah, there was one guy for a while who kept some reptiles in the area, and he would post on Craigslist every now and then that he had dubia roaches. And it was like, it to the point I would just send him a message. I'd give him $5. He'd give me like a 16-ounce deli cup just packed full of dubia roaches. And it's like, I could get a third of that for $20 at the pet store right now. You know, it's like, that was a good deal. But he moved away. So I lost my dubia connection.
And I used to, back before I moved in my own house, it was a small pet shop, just like a hole in the wall type place with this cranky old lady that's been doing it for like 30 years. And I went there enough that it was the same thing. I would pay for like, I don't know, 100 dubias, and she'd give me like 300. She would just start shoving them in. She's like, here you go. We'll see you next week. Yeah. And now I'm like, okay, well, now I really need that deal of the extra roaches. Now that I have like 10 times the amount of animals that I had back then.
Yeah.
And it's about just making the, you know, the 2-hour trip down there once a week just to get the extra feeders.
I feel you. Yeah. It's frustrating where right now I'm working out of my basement, like in the house. And so I've got wife and kids here, and she's cool with like 99% of everything that I do. But she has a few lines that, you know, it's, I don't want to cross just because I don't want to like get divorced or something. But it's like, you know, she's cool with everything that I keep except for roaches. She doesn't like roaches. She doesn't like black widows. And occasionally I'll have some roaches in here, but it's like I'll bring them home and I'll feed everybody so they're not sticking around. She's none the wiser. Hopefully she never listens to my podcasts because I tell this story more than once. But, you know, so she's not cool with that. And it's frustrating because like I've tried breeding crickets and just, you know, cause I was like, I'll save money, but it's difficult. It smells, they're noisy. It's just like, this is bad. But for a while I had a, covert, dubia roach colony going for months. So many, but it was like in a plastic tub hidden under a table. And then I would put stuff in front of it and they were thriving. I was like saving some good money and it was easy. I was really enjoying it.
It's a healthier bug too than the crickets. It's a lot more nutrients in there.
But my cats, they exposed me. And they didn't knock it over or anything like that. But they would move whatever I had in front of it over because I could hear the scratching and moving around. And you know, they're batting at it, meowing at it. She's like, "What in the world?" She thought maybe a spider got loose or something. Wanted to save it. And it was like, "Oh my God, there are thousands of roaches in this container. Get them out of the house." It's like, God damn it. So that's one of the reasons I'm like looking for a new spot, like somewhere I can move and essentially have a studio outside of the house so I can keep some species that, you know, that are more venomous that she's not cool with and have some roach colonies to save some money.
There you go, man. I had a similar thing back when I was at my parents' house when I first started this. Something got knocked over and there were about hundreds of those little things running around. And I think probably 2 years after I moved, they were still finding them in there. So I felt a little bad. But now, well, we do a couple different roach varieties. So not only dubia, we also have red runners and lobsters. And if I could tell anyone anything, don't do lobster roaches.
Really?
You can get a million of them. They're so prolific, but they can breed in any scenario. So I remember this used to be the bird room. And then we had this as a little bit of a reptile room. And now it's kind of like the studio slash, you know, display enclosures. And while I was moving stuff, there's like hundreds of these little things running around. They're going in the walls and stuff. And I'm like, oh no. So I have, I have two big imported male tokay geckos that are in this room. The one's in this room, one's in my other room. And so they pick off any of the bugs that aren't supposed to be out. It's been doing pretty good. I see them every now and then. They're fat. They're like, they're big dudes.
Yeah.
So it's been going good with them.
You just got free-range tokay geckos?
Free-ranging tokay geckos, oh, wow. Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're such a hardy species, and with reptile rooms, I got all these bulbs, so as long as the doors close, it gets around what the ambient temperature that they need to be able to live comfortably. So we've got one here, one in there. I think I've got two or three in my reptile building as well. It's a little bit bigger, so I got more. And I know there's always one. I have a little bit of a stack of plywood, so every now and then I'll lift up the wood, and there it'll be just chilling. Then it'll bark and run away into the darkness.
That's very cool. I've got some free range spiders down here, but it's just because it's a basement and you get spiders. And also yeah. I have the temperature and humidity and lighting where it's very, it's normally dark down here, except for the reptile enclosures that have their own lights. But most of the time the tarantulas don't like light. So they're fine with just the ambient light, either coming from the reptile enclosures or from the windows, but they're small basement windows, So it's not like bright ever down here. So normal spiders thrive. So there's house spiders, there's wolf spiders, there's you name it. It's like I just kind of like moving stuff around, checking the corners, and can find probably a dozen different types of spiders down here. And I just let them do their thing because their role is to clean up the escaped crickets that get out. And I find I'll be moving in some enclosures or something, and I'll find little tiny, cobweb spiders or house spiders or something. But in their web are full, crickets that are three times their size. They somehow got caught up in their web and they slowly ate them. It's just like, I got a whole bunch of really fat spiders. I think last time I was making a joke with someone and we went around and counted at the corner of all the corners and under enclosures and desks and tables and stuff. And there was, it was somewhere over 50 different spiders that we could spot, and it's like, there's probably as many that we can't see. So it's kind of funny, the free range spiders that are around. I'm looking at one right here on the end of my desk, just kind of watching me record. But yeah, they're pretty cool. I never heard of somebody keeping a toke gecko free range though. So that's kind of cool. I like that idea.
Yeah, there's a few people. Kevin McCurley over at Nerd, he's got a bunch that are just running around. I remember seeing an old video of their kitchen. There's toke gecko eggs just glued in a cabinet.
That's awesome. Yeah. When I lived down in Florida, they weren't toke geckos, but I can't remember what type it was, but there was, we always had
a house gecko.
Yeah. Little house geckos running around. There was another, some kind of fence post gecko or something. I loved it. That was one of my favorite things about living in Florida was just the reptiles that would move into your house.
And I used to, lived in Texas till I was about, 18 or 19. And a lot of, anoles, the fence lizards and, house geckos.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And my cats loved it. It was like their little toys. They could never catch. Well, every now and then they could catch them. But I moved back when I moved here back to West Virginia. So I went from Daytona Beach to Huntington, West Virginia. And it was one of those situations where I was like, okay, I'm done with this town. We just kind of just got fed up. We lost our job. Something else happened. And we're just like, all right, let's just go. Let's go back. And rented a U-Haul, moved everything, just packed everything into the U-Haul. And then as we were getting ready to pull out, there was a big kind of like a succulent. I don't know exactly what type of plant it was, but it was a massive plant we had mm-hmm. sitting outside the front door for years. And everywhere we moved it with us and put it in front of that. And it was just like, oh, we can't leave the plant. So I grabbed it, put it into the back of the U-Haul, shut it. And this was in October. So it was nice and warm down in Florida. Then we get to Huntington and it's snowing. And it was we already had the apartment set up. So it was we just pull into town, back up to the apartment, unload everything. And then I noticed as we were opening up boxes that there were geckos and lizards everywhere. And there had to be a dozen different lizards in that plant that we moved into the truck. And then they dispersed and hid in all the other boxes and stuff. The landlord was you guys moved in. Now we have a lizard problem. Are there reptiles in all these other apartments? I'm like, I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
It wasn't me.
It totally was not me.
I get it. Blame the animal guy. Uh-huh. I think he's profiling you with that.
Yeah. But it was funny. And when we moved out a couple of years later, there was still a few running around. I was like, yeah, you guys are breeding and everything. You're surviving. But yeah, that's a pretty cool concept. So you've got so you're on Morph Market, and if people wanted to follow you on Instagram, it's DBCB Exotics, right?
It's probably the worst name. I thought it was catchy at the time, but now that I'm trying to do collabs and stuff, people are like DBVBDB. I'm like, oh, son of a. I feel like it's too late now. I've been doing it for 3 years. I can't just change the name, so I'm stuck with it. It's better than my first name. The first business name back in I think 2019 is when I decided to run this as a business. The first one, I called it Jungle Herps. And I quickly got a response that said, hey, that's not a good name. So quickly switched it before I got too big.
Yeah. Yeah, for whatever reason, I was talking to my wife. She was wanting me to run some errands this afternoon. I was like, I can't. I've got a podcast. She was like, oh, who are you recording with? And I was like, CBGB Exotics? It's like, that's not right. But
that's what I'm saying. Everyone does it. I'm like, son of a bitch. I tried on Brian Barczyk's podcast. I tried to get shout outs before I went on his podcast and everything. And he'd be like, the super chat comes from DCB. I'm like, son of a bitch.
What does it stand for? I figure CB is Captive Bread.
Yeah, it's Dakota, my last name, and then gotcha. Captive Bread.
Okay.
I thought it, you know, DBCB, it runs off.
Yeah.
But it's almost like, you know, Wiccan's Wicked Reptiles. It's a little bit of a tongue twister, but mine's like 10 times worse.
Yeah. I get twisted up on that all the time. And I feel better because I had Brian Barczyk on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, as well as Jay Rodriguez was last week. And I mean, they're both big time people, and they were getting tongue tied saying Wiccan's Wicked is Reptiles. So I was like, that is definitely a tongue tier. That's like, there was somebody else that, oh, who was it? Oh, Exotic Slayer. For a long time, I thought it was Exotic Slayer. Like this guy kills exotics or something. I was like, what? Kept hearing people talking about it, and I finally was like, I gotta go check this out. And I'm like, oh, Exotic Slayer. That's completely different. But yeah.
Totally different context.
Yeah. Yeah, but changing your name is difficult, especially once you get a following. I started out as The Tarantula Collective because I don't remember why. There was a reason. I think it was like back, I don't know how old you are, but back growing up, there was some bands, like I was into like a punk music pretty much. And there was like big debates, like, is it Offspring or is it The Offspring? You know, and if like you said it one way, then you definitely weren't a fan because you didn't know the right way of saying it. And then like there was a band called The Queers, but sometimes you'd buy their merch and it just said Queers. There was no The. So it was like, do you want the or no The? So like I went back and forth for a while, and for whatever reason I decided, oh, I know why. There was a Brazilian dubstep DJ or something called Tarantula Collective on YouTube. And he had like 2,000 subscribers. So I was like, there's no way I'll ever be as big as that guy. And I'm going to go with The Tarantula Collective to differentiate myself from this guy making music. Cause he's a big name and I don't want him to sue me or anything like that. And it's like, I looked back a couple of months ago and I was like, he still has like 2,000 subscribers. Maybe I can drop the.
And take the name.
Yeah. And I don't know. When I refer to it, it's just the Tarantula Collective. I mean, I will use the if it kind of fits in with the syntax of the sentence or whatever, but a lot of people were like leaving comments saying, get rid of the. So I did it on YouTube, but then when I tried to do it on TikTok and Instagram and stuff like that, it was like, no, you can't do that. So now it's like in this, my website, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok are The Tarantula Collective, but YouTube is just Tarantula Collective. And I'm like, God, I need to switch that back, or I need it to be uniform across all sites. So yeah, it's not easy to change, especially when you're on multiple platforms.
Yeah.
And now we got issues with people stealing variations of your name.
You know, it's like, well, I feel kind of bad. I did this completely unintentionally, but I think last year at my local New England Reptile Expo, there are a lot of names that are pretty similar to mine. We had like Debs, CB Exotics. There was like it was DB, but not CB Exotics. I'm like, oh shit.
Oh God.
If I ever run that show, I need to be on like the opposite side of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yeah. I mean, maybe I don't know what to tell you to do there. I was talking to Tarantula Cat the other day and somebody on TikTok, because I think her name on TikTok is like at @Tarantula_Cat or something like that. And somebody made another account that was just Tarantula Cat one word or something. It could be the other way. But essentially it looked like they were just downloading her videos, like ripping them off YouTube and posting them on TikTok and getting like hundreds of thousands, millions, more video views than she was getting on her own TikTok. I was TikTok's like,
that's a Wild West, man.
That is people messed up.
It's like, if you're doing this and like you are with the animals and your business around it, you'll never get views. But if you're just some guy on TikTok and you post like the same thing, I don't know why, but like people, it's more exciting for some reason.
Yeah. And they were doing a weird thing where they were speeding it up, maybe like 110% or something, just so that if you were like searching, you know, trying to like doing like a copyright search.
Yeah.
The pitch and everything would be off a little bit. And then they stretched the video, you know, instead of like cropping it in, they stretched it. So she like looks like this weird Slender Man type of thing. And speaking in a really high voice. It's just like, that's so creepy. But yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of TikTok, man. Yeah. I don't like the duets, and it's people just getting views off of videos that I've done, like the Tegu biting one. It has like a million or whatever views. There's a bunch of duets, and it's just the people that are like this on the other side, and they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And like, that's it. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? I don't know. It looks so cringy to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I posted one about the Lacey Act, and a lot of people
Lacey Act. That's actually how I found you. That was a good, I do a lot of, you know, supporting USARC and telling people about what's going on. I do not have the production. Like, your video not only was informative, but it kept me watching with all the, you know, the B roll and all that going into it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not like creative enough to think that outside of the box. I never know if it's not reptile related. I don't have footage for it.
Right.
But yours, like, it was a masterpiece, man. You did a really good job on that.
Thank you. Yeah. I tried to make it as engaging as possible to try to get people to actually watch it. Cause I know a lot of times this type of videos, you're talking about something serious. People are like, yeah, this is boring.
And people, it always a 10 out of 10. Yours like blew up on the Facebook groups. Every day there was someone reposting your thing on a different group. So
yeah,
you definitely knocked it out of the park with that one.
Nice. It also got a lot of hate. I mean, I got some like really nasty emails from people that are like, you fear mongering, trying to raise money.
You don't know what's going on. It's not going to happen. Blah, blah, blah. Those are the same people that like when it does actually go through because we didn't do anything, they're like, how could we have let this happen? The government's such this and that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's one thing. If you don't believe it and you don't want to support it, then don't. But I mean, like leaving comments or like messaging someone directly just to bitch at him and be like, don't do something that may have a positive effect. Like that's just fucked up. Like, I don't, why are you that type of person?
I watched, there's this, it's some venomous keeper, not one of the big guys. It's some, one of these smaller channels. He made a video. He's like downplaying the whole thing and basically making fun of the people making videos like yours of the Lacey Act.
Yeah.
But then I think a couple months later, he then made a video, you know, recommending and defending the Lacey Act and how like we need to actually do something.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah. That was one of the biggest, you know, somebody was like, you're just doing this for clickbait to get views and make money. And it's like,
it's the worst possible video to make for views.
It's like, that's not, no, that's not how it works. Now, if I was doing one about a tarantula crawling out of my mouth or, you know, biting me somewhere obscene, then yeah. It's like
I don't know how people do that, man.
Do like, what?
The mouth thing.
Oh my
God. I don't know if it's like a texture thing for me. I'd gag if a tarantula was in my mouth. Not only I'd be scared to shit because I'm getting over the thing. So we have a couple spiders. I got an Arizona blonde or blondie. Is it blonde or blondie?
Arizona blonde.
Blonde. Okay. I got it because a guy at the booth, my wife wanted jumping spiders. He had a sign with these Arizona blondes that was like, good beginner tarantula. I'm like, well, that's all the convincing I need. I'm going to get it and then do a bunch of research. And actually your videos have helped me with that. So we have that. She's really into the bugs. We have that, the black widow, jumping spiders, a couple mantises. That's kind of like her things with the inverts and mine's with the reptiles and stuff.
Nice. Yeah. It's kind of the same but opposite. Like I'm into the inverts. My wife is into the reptiles. Like technically all the snakes are hers. I just end up taking care of them because I'm down here anyways, taking care of everything else. So it's the easier that way.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I got her. She loves tortoises. And we're more of like a go big, go home type thing. So I got a little baby sulcata.
Yeah.
So we'll be moving to North Carolina. We'll be able to do mostly an outdoor and then over winter, we'll build a nice shed for him.
Nice.
But now it was her gift, you know, it was her thing. But I think like a month later, now I'm the one changing the water, feeding the greens, all of that.
Yeah. That's how it works, I guess. Well, yeah.
I love this tortoise, so it's not like I can't believe I got taken. Like the sulcata is awesome. He's a personable little dude.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, there's I think one of the issues with the whole, at least from the people that watch my videos, is that they just thought it was a reptile issue. You know, that's something that people in the reptile hobby need to worry about.
No.
Or, you know, maybe tropical fish people or something, but nobody cares about tarantulas. They're not going to do anything. And it's like, they already are doing things. Like, you know, just because it's the, you know, Reptile Keepers Association doesn't mean that what's good for them isn't also good for us. So trying to like sell people on that concept that, yeah, US ARC is going to have our best interests in mind as well. They're not going to throw invert keepers under the bus has been or the butt. It's been a hard sale, I think, on for a lot of people.
US ARC does a lot for the exotic community in general. Personally, for the North Carolina, I'm looking to expand more into the exotic side. Primates are a thing that I'm really looking into. And I think in the next 5-6 years, once we have all the full enclosure built out, everything done, we'll be going into, you know, lemurs, some of the smaller species, capuchin monkeys, macaques, things like that. But I saw even with North Carolina, they had a statewide ban. Now it got shut down, but it was good to know that, you know, it wasn't just, they weren't just repping for, you know, they, I think there were bigger monitors and venomous snakes in there, but there was also talking about the big cats and things of that nature. So they're definitely not just for reptiles, although it's in their name. They're looking out for all the exotics.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool of them. And I'm lucky enough, I live in West Virginia, and there are a lot of terrible things you can say about West Virginia, but there's also a lot of good. I mean, it's a beautiful state.
Song, man. That's the first thing.
Yeah. Hey, we got John Denver singing about it. It's beautiful.
Can't be all bad.
Yeah. But they're also, I won't get into the bad stuff, but, and this is like, you know, every coin has two sides. So it's good for me, but it also has some detrimental effects in the state, but they're really against a lot of government regulation when it comes to a lot of, like, you know, and because because we have so many like homesteaders, you know, or people that like, they live up in a holler and they never come down off the hill, you know, like they're up in the mountain. That's where they have all kinds of animals up there because that's how they survive. You know, like they've got chickens, they've got goats, they've got, I mean, all kinds of stuff, and they eat them or, you know, milk them or eat their eggs or, you know,
that's what I would love to do. What I hope to do one day, becoming more self-sufficient with my meat.
Yeah.
And just stuff stuff you put into your body, you know.
Right.
I don't trust the grocery stores, man. All the GMO and shit they're pumping in there.
Yeah.
It would be awesome. And it tastes so much better. You've had like farm fresh eggs, mm-hmm. or just like a nice cut of steak from, like, my wife used to do that. She would grow out cows and bring them to the butcher that was down the road, man.
Yeah.
Those steaks, they hit different. They hit different.
They certainly do. In fact, I just got back from lunch with my kid. We had to go run a few errands, and there's right downtown. We've got, it's like a very boring name. It's just called the Public Market, but it's essentially like a little tiny grocery store downtown. And when I say downtown for Wheeling, I mean, I think there's like 20,000 people that live here or something. So it's like, I've got way more followers on YouTube than are in the surrounding area. And still nobody knows who I am, which is kind of nice because then none of them care. They're not watching YouTube, but it's a little grocery store downtown, and everything they sell is like all the vegetables, all the meat, everything is grown organically, locally, you know? So it's like, if you want some actual fresh, you know, lettuce or carrots or whatever, like they've got them there, you know.
And, yeah, and I think we got one of those too.
Yeah,
I just got some of their hot dogs, man, and
yeah,
definitely, and better than the Franks,
right? And in the back, they have a little restaurant. So I mean, it's not a huge menu.
Oh, that's cool.
But like, you know, they've got a couple burgers, they got a couple breakfast sandwiches, and then they've got like the sandwich of the day and some soup. And everything they make in the restaurant comes from the products they're selling in the store up front. So you know, it's all, you know, there's no preservatives, no steroids, no weird chemicals or any of that kind of stuff in it. And we got a mushroom Swiss steak sandwich or something. I don't even know what exactly it was called, but it was, I mean, like, just the cheese, you know, tastes different than the store-bought
exactly,
cheese from Kroger. It's like, this is what real cheese is supposed to taste like. And like the just the meat was so tender. And I mean, it was like a $10 sandwich, so it's not cheap. Again, I could get a dollar burger at McDonald's. And have been, but it's like, it's so much better. And I also feel better after eating it.
Like, I'm convinced, like, McDonald's isn't meat. I mean, it's got to be like tofu or something like that, just a blob. And they got like meat sweat that they like spritz on it. It's like, it's the LaCroix of burgers. You get that like faint resemblance of a hamburger, but it's not a hamburger. It can't be.
I feel you. But I guess what I was getting at is they're against regulations down here. So because there's so many people with, and they're not, a lot of them aren't even farmers, you know, it's just like, they're not selling anything, any of the produce they grow or any of the animals that they slaughter or anything like that. Like that's, they're doing that just to feed their family, you know, maybe like their neighbors or something that, you know, they're trading stuff around. And it's like the same with, you know, you buy raw milk and raw honey and all that kind of stuff. But the, when it comes to animals, there's, you know, I remember growing up and a friend of mine's parents knew a guy that had a lion and a bear on his farm, you know, and it's like, they were just his pets. And one time the lion got loose and they had to, like, all the people in town had to go out in the woods and try to capture it, get it back, you know, and it's and it, on its farm. But it's like, it's legal to have a kangaroo here. Like if you want a pet kangaroo, go right ahead. So yeah, it's like, man. I know that
guy, I was going to say, I want to be the guy you're talking about, but then you said the lion got loose. So I was like, oh, I don't want to be that guy that gets the lion loose. I just want to own the lion.
I mean, I don't want any big cats, but I mean, just the fact that I can, if I want to have a kangaroo in my backyard, I can like that.
There's a nice freedom to it.
Yeah. I never will.
The Carolinas, but, keep going.
Yeah, I never will, but it's just nice knowing that I could if I wanted.
Exactly. The Carolinas are a lot like that, too. I believe last year, legislation tried to sneak some stuff in, like, right before the bill was passed. I think it was, like, 3 days trying to ban all venomous.
Yeah.
South Carolina is, like, it's South Carolina, Pennsylvania. Those are, like, the big states with venomous keepers because it's completely legal, which... I got certain, you know, maybe it shouldn't be 100% anyone can go out and get a cobra, but there's that freedom to it, right? And everyone came together within those 3 days and they got that taken right out, which was really impressive. So
yeah,
you can talk trash about, you know, Virginia's, the Carolinas, but they want to keep their rights. That's the thing. And that's the thing I really like. I don't know what's going on with Florida. Florida used to be the same way, but FWC is just paving right over them with laws.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't wrap your head around Florida. I spent too much time there. It's like for like 3 years. Like I need to get out of this state, and
they're a different breed, man.
I just couldn't for one reason or another. And it was just like it was nice for the first couple of years, and then the beauty and the beach, like the, you know, that kind of allure started to wear off, and it was just like dealing with NASCAR fans and dealing with you know, the biker rallies, and just like. Yeah, this is getting old real fast. Like, I just want to go to work, and the roads are completely backed up with bikers that are just, you know, driving around drinking, showing, like, I don't know how many pairs of 50-year-old women's breasts I would see on my way to work some mornings, but it's like they would just see me trying to cross the main thoroughfare and move on my way, and they would just, like, laugh and flash me. And it's like, that's wonderful. Thank you for those. But, yeah, West Virginia is the last state, I believe, I'm pretty confident about this, that it's legal for venomous snake handling because of the churches, like the Pentecostal or apostolic churches around here that handle snakes. It's like they've outlawed venomous snake handling, I think, in every other state. And it's like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not sure. Like,
you guys keep tagus up there?
I don't, but I
don't know. But can you? Are you allowed?
Yeah, yeah. I'm fairly sure, certain. Yeah, I haven't heard of any animal that you can't keep in West Virginia so far.
No, maybe West Virginia's a place.
Except for native species. Like, I can't go out and, like, grab a snake and bring it inside and start keeping. I mean, I probably could, but technically I could get in trouble for that. There are some, you know, species of, like, king snake. Like, I have an eastern king snake, but it was, like, from Virginia. So it that specific species isn't here in West Virginia, so that was okay. But I can't, like, go down to the park and catch one and bring it inside. Or, you know, there's some, like, cottonmouth, rattlesnakes, stuff like that, you can't keep, but that's only because they're protected, and, you know, so
but you can keep the cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much anything else I don't think is a problem. And we've got some cool reptiles around here. Sometimes I don't even realize it because I don't see them very often, but, like, you know, you get under the New River and stuff like that, there's a lot of endangered newts and just, you know, cool little lizards and stuff that I remember when going camping and stuff as a kid, I would capture them in coffee cans and bring them home and keep them as pets. And now I'm like, oh man, that was highly illegal. That's that's a threatened species here. And probably because of little kids like me capturing them in coffee cans and bringing them home.
Children are the main reason why the extinction of like 8 species of turtles.
Yeah. But I know when I was in Florida, it was a pain. But they were like selling those red-eared slider turtles when they were like the size of a half dollar. For like I mean, like $5 or something ridiculously cheap. And it's like, or like buy the enclosure, get the turtle for free type of deal. Yeah. And they sell like a little $10 critter keeper at the little shop on the beach. And I remember I was the first year I was there, we ended up getting two of them. And I was like, oh, these are cute little turtles. And I didn't do my research. I didn't know anything about them. And before I knew it, I had a 50-gallon aquarium with two massive turtles in there. I'm like, well, I got to get rid of these. What am I going to do with them? And everybody's like, whatever you do, don't just let them go because they will thrive in the Florida, you know, ponds and stuff. And they're invasive. So it was that was kind of a pain. Those things were nasty. They turned me off to turtles altogether. Like since then, I'm like, no turtles.
Yeah, no, I'm a tortoise guy, not a turtle guy. But yeah, the red-eared slider, they're such a messy turtle, man. Ugh. You gotta, I mean, we're doing like double weekly water changes in there. Yeah, it's a mess with them.
Yeah. I mean, just burning through filters. I was changing the water every week, and I was to the point where I was like, I should be doing this twice a week because 5 days in, and it's like the room smells. This is not cool. But yeah, and it's weird because we've got, there's not a huge population here. I'm sure it's probably similar to New Hampshire. I mean, it's a big state. There's a lot of area, but we've got like maybe 1 million people statewide, you know, and like they're concentrated in like 3 or 4 towns. You know, it's like there's Huntington, Charleston, Morgantown, Wheeling and Beckley. Like those are probably the only towns that have more than like 20,000 residents. I mean, there's a bunch of other towns, but I mean, I remember a few cities I shouldn't even say that, little towns that have like 200 people. Like that's the population. But I mean, they've got a post office and a stoplight, so it's a town. So it's a little different than like Illinois or Florida or places where there's millions of people in some of these cities. But we do have exotic pet expos. But one of the big things, at least the one that I go to a lot, is they don't allow venomous animals. Like even though it's legal to keep them, they don't let you sell them at their shows, I guess.
I know Pennsylvania has a big venomous show, but I never really heard of any others than Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. I really don't think, I don't know, the venomous is a tough thing because I'm all for people keeping their rights, but you know there's going to be some Joe Schmoes that pick up a cobra because it's cool, and that's just going to negatively impact the hobby when inevitably something goes wrong with it.
Yeah, and from talking to them, it kind of seems like their mindset is like, we're cool with people that keep venomous snakes. Like, that's not what we're against, but if like, you know, like if you have the experience and the training to handle venomous snakes, then you know where to go to get one. Like, you're not going to go to a reptile expo and buy one off a table. Like, the only people that are going to be buying those are people that probably shouldn't be owning them. It's like, I wish we could take
an impulse like a boom viper.
Yeah. And it's like, it's difficult because all tarantulas are venomous, you know? So it's like, if you ban all venomous animals, you're kind of, you know, you're banning venomous animals that aren't harmful, really, you know? And like
Bearded dragons are technically venomous.
Really?
I'm like 80% sure. I could be talking out my butt, but I'm like 80% sure it's true. They have a very mild form of venom. And even like Nerodia, water snakes, are also mildly venomous. Like nothing that's going to do anything to it. Like a bee sting is way more potent than this, but there's technically venom in there.
Yeah. And that's how most spiders are. Or they're venomous, but they won't, like I just did that video on the most venomous spiders, and like 8 out of 10 are like, you really have to be doing something to get bit because they're not going to bite a human. You're so freaking big, you know, like,
yeah,
you got to be like trying snakes, to kill their, what's that?
Like hognose snakes.
Yeah.
They're technically rear fang venomous, but like they never bite.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like the black widow spider, I've got one behind me, and I mean, they're like featured in Stranger Things right now, which I think is funny. It's like, that's exactly what Black Widows needed was another massively popular.
Kids, like, keeping them in a bunch of jars and stuff.
Yeah. No spoiler. Yeah. If you haven't watched it, we're probably going to drop some spoilers. So be careful listening. But yeah, it was, you see them like, you know, he's keeping them and they're crawling around and it's just like all these deadly, scary spiders. And it's like, when I interact with it, I'm a little nervous just because I've had those stories and images put in my brain for decades. Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is so scary. But it's like, I mean, I posted something the other day on Instagram or Twitter or something. It was a picture of it. And I was like, you know, they don't shake and get like nervous, but I was sweating profusely during this whole photo shoot, you know, not so much that I was even worried that it was going to bite me, I was more worried that, because when you're taking photos, sometimes I'm focused more on the camera and the focus and the lighting, and the spider will walk out of frame. So it's like, now I've like, I gotta like move the camera and try to figure out where it just went. So I was worried it would like, it would get away. And then I'd have to like go to my wife and be like, there's a black widow loose in the house. And I'm pretty sure she's gravid. So there may be a lot of black widows in the house soon, you know, and they would thrive here. So, you know, that was my nervousness, I guess. But, you know, they're she's so sweet. Like, I know it's a weird thing to say, but it's like, I would take my paintbrush and try to like get her to move a little bit so I could get a better angle for the photo or something. And she never struck. She never even like tried to run really far. She would just like play dead. Like, I'm not alive. Leave me alone. Don't eat me. It's just like, you're a sweetheart. Why do you get such a bad rap? You know, just because you look terrifying.
They're a cool species. I remember 13 or 14 back in Texas, my mom caught a black widow. And we did the stupid thing where we like kept it for like a week. I think it had to be like a critter keeper or something. We just bought like 3 crickets and, you know, threw one in every now and then. We got to watch it eat. I think eventually she just let it go after a week. But it was a cool experience, man. They're a cool spider. They beautiful. Are.
Yeah. And I didn't even realize until I started keeping one. This is like the second or third one that I've kept. But like when they're on their web, they're pretty agile. You know, they can move around pretty quickly in multitude, like every direction. But when they're not on their web, they're just like on the table or something. They're very clumsy. You know, it's like they're slipping and sliding. They're not cool with that. I actually have I'm going to reach up right here. I don't know if you can see it. I mean, this is a podcast, so people listening won't be able to see it. Let's just get it in frame. You see that little ball is a black widow egg sac.
Oh, awesome, man.
Yeah, I got her and she dropped an egg sac and I kept looking at it like, what am I going to do with that? Somebody was like, just pull it out and freeze it. And I'm like, I don't know if I really want to do that, but I don't know how long, you know, the gestation period, I'm sure that's not the right term, but I didn't know how long from the moment she makes the sac to when they would start emerging from the sac would be. And I know, but I didn't know the ventilation holes on the enclosure were large enough for the little, you know, spiderlings to just stroll right out. Like, not big enough for her to get out, but definitely for the baby. So I was like, I got to pull it and put it in a container that they wouldn't be able to just, you know, crawl out of the vent holes. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. I'm trying to pawn it off on somebody, like one of these tarantula dealers I know. Like, why don't you take a zigzag and sell these babies?
That's good stuff.
Because they're so prolific around the United States. Like, there's so many places you could find them just hanging out. But for whatever reason, trying to find them for retail can be difficult. Like every time I post a picture or have one in a video, people are like, where can I buy those? And it's like, I don't know. Go outside and catch one. But yeah. So we got to have to wrap this up. We've been going for a while now. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about or mention or shout out or anything like that?
No, man. I think I'm pretty good. We had a good time talking.
Yeah. So you've got, it's DBCB Exotics on YouTube, correct?
Yes.
And DBCB Exotics on Instagram and Facebook, I'm assuming.
Yep. It's all the same.
Very cool.
I was blessed enough not to have to do like underscores for some. I can just do DBCB Exotics. I don't think there's a space. I think that's the only difference.
Yeah. And do you have anything exciting that's going to be coming out for sale on Morph Market or getting posted on Instagram? Like any cool?
Yeah, we got a bunch of good stuff.
Yeah,
man.
What you got?
I got some Chihuahuas that should be on the market here in, I think, the end of June. They'll be old enough. I think they were hatched the beginning of May, so late June they should be ready. Maybe I'll hold them off till sometime in July, but they're coming up soon. We got some tegu. We got a gravid tegu lizard that I'm very excited for. It'll be my first time producing tegus, which is going to be pretty cool. It's a blue and black and white cross male with a Florida imported female. So they're both really high white. The female has a nice orange belly. So I'm excited what those babies are going to look like. She should be laying here within the next couple of weeks. And I believe my Argus monitor is gravid as well. She's either gravid or she's cycling. She looks big. So fingers crossed. We paired them a couple of times. So yeah. I might be doing some Arguses too, which is very exciting. That'll be another year's first. We've had them for a couple of years, but I'm finally, they're old enough. I've gotten the female to cycle and lay infertile eggs before, so I now paired them this year. And maybe we can get a nice fertile clutch of Argus babies.
That's awesome. Very cool. Now, I can't tell really because of just the video quality and lighting and stuff, but it kind of looks like you have a big red beard. Like, is it red or is it brown?
My beard is so weird. So, like, it's blonde right here, I got this little blonde and the mustache is blonde.
Yeah.
But then this is like rich ginger, man. Like a gingerbread man. I have brown hair.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I used to have blonde hair too when I was a kid. And then for some reason over the years, it's just turned brown.
Yeah, I had fire engine red hair growing up and then it just started falling out. Like it never changed color. I just went bald. But my beard, I'm starting to get, I don't know if you can see it. No, not really.
Yeah, I think, show up on camera. I think we got the same color. I just, for some reason, I have like natural blonde highlights in mine.
Yeah, I'm starting to get white highlights. My sister teases me every time she sees me. It's like, you got another white patch. Like it was a few strands of just white hair, and it's now turning into patches of white hair. So I got like white streaks in my red beard. But yeah, it's always nice talking to another bearded individual on the podcast. And when I get a Tokay Gecko, I'm definitely going to have to reach out to you and pick up one of yours when you have some available, because I definitely want to get one sometime in the future. Just kind of taking it slow right now. Like people are always trying to send me tarantulas. It's like, I don't have room.
Over time. Tokays are way better than tarantulas. You'll get to see them. They're not going to go into a hide 24/7.
Oh, come on. That's not completely fair. Some of my tarantulas stay out a lot. But that's why you end up with 100, because like if you have 100 tarantulas, that means at any time, a couple of them will be out. Yeah.
So no, yeah, I think you'll do really well with Tokays just because I know some of the species that you keep in right now can be a little cantankerous than others, a little flighty.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll have any problem with Tokays. The biggest hurdle is the personality, but I think you'll handle it pretty well. I don't think you'll have any issues with it. And then the care-wise, it's pretty much a crested gecko. It's pretty much a day gecko. They're pretty similar with humidity and heat requirements and UVB.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love my day gecko. She moved again. So I keep turning around to look at her while we're talking about geckos. She's a weird one. But yeah, that's very cool. So you got your YouTube, you got your Instagram, you got your Morph Market. No, you don't have a website. You just have Facebook, right? No website yet?
Yeah, I can. I'm not good at tech, so I can't build my own. And people want like thousands. And I was like, I'm not going to build a website. I'll just go on Morph Market.
Yeah. I did that. I actually had a friend that was studied web design and all that kind of stuff and was paying him to build my website. And then he got like a real job as a web designer somewhere and kind of just like, I'll get to it. And it's like 6 months, a year. I'm like, all right, I just went to Squarespace and I mean, it's much cheaper and it's pretty much all built. You just drag and drop. So it's if you ever decide to get a website, check them out. Cause I think it's less than $100. Yeah, it's a good little deal. And I mean, it's not going to be like super customizable and original, but I mean, if you just need a little marketplace, it's pretty simple, pretty cheap. But yeah, so thank you so much for being willing to come on, man, and talk. And, you know, we'll have to, I don't think I'll ever be up in New England anytime soon, but when you move down to North Carolina, we should get together, do a collab video or something.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, you're welcome to come back on the podcast anytime. It's always nice having repeat guests. You know, we can talk more at length. I've got another podcast I'm recording here in like 15 minutes with, are you familiar with Venom Macro? He's a photographer, does a lot of photos of mainly scorpions and stuff.
Yeah,
Gordon Riley. He's phenomenal. I saw that every time I click onto full screen for your video, in the back there, you've got a camera on top of your enclosure. Is that looks like a Canon camera back there?
Yeah, it's the Rebel SL2.
Yeah. I was like, I identify the camera, and then I could see one lens. It almost looks like a macro or a zoom lens or something behind you. And you don't have a lens cap on the back of it, and it's been driving me crazy.
I don't know where it is.
Like, he's going to get so much dust particles on the inside of that lens.
I know. It's on the worst part, too. It's not even the actual lens. It's like where you hook it up.
Yeah,
like
the back of the lens, the most sensitive part.
To be fair, I don't use that lens as often.
Yeah.
We're usually like, I either use my 24 millimeter, my 50, or my 60 macro. Those are my go-to. So then I've got the wide angle for the videos.
Yeah. I used to work with a guy who was actually the guy that got me into using real cameras and stuff. And I'll go and visit him every now and then. It's where I used to work. And we'll stop in there and talk to him. And he's got his just lenses just sitting like that on a shelf with no cap on the back of them. Like the sensor completely exposed on the camera. I'm like, dude, stop doing that. You're driving me crazy. You get a little bit of dust particle or a fingerprint smudge and your whole shot's ruined. And those things
I'm awful with my lenses.
They're so terrible to clean. I do not like cleaning. I mean, lenses aren't too bad. Like you get the front of the lens, you know, it can have particles on it. It's just that, well, I do a lot of macro photography. So I get one speck of dust on the backside of that lens. Yeah. And like I'm editing it. I'm like, oh, there's a little black. And it looks so big in a macro photo, that like thing I couldn't even see.
All the little baby geckos, I need the macro lens or else it's just like this speck this far away.
But it's been really cool talking to you, man. I really appreciate it. And you know, you really sold me on the Tokay geckos. Cause I was enamored by them when I saw them, but I was always kind of turned off by their personality, I guess, or what I perceived to be their personality. So it's cool to hear that you've got some just free range doing pest control in your rooms and hanging out. That's awesome. I was at NARBC and I was with Fear Not Tarantulas, kind of like hanging out at their booth. And one of the guys that worked there came back with a couple of Tokay geckos. And I think it was only like $20 a piece or something, like $19.99. I was like, oh man, I really want to get one of those. And he opened up the enclosure to kind of like show it to me and it bit his finger. And I was like, nope, I'm good. So like,
yeah, the bites do kind of suck, but it just kind of is with the territory. I guess my only advice is always go captive bred. Don't do the $15, $20 wild caughts because 90% of the time, number one, they're super dehydrated. So that has some negative effects on the kidneys. You don't know if it's too much, it's going to go into renal failure. There's a lot of parasite loads. So sometimes you're okay with not deworming. Sometimes you got to deworm it. Mm. And then there's that whole acclimation process of you can't deworm too early when it comes in or else it's the deworm is going to dehydrate the animal even further. It's going to suck a lot of that fluid out. So that's a big mistake when people take in imports is they immediately take it to the vet, deworm, and they're just shoving stuff down this animal's mouth and it just passes from the stress and dehydration. It's a process, you know, that $20 price tag is pretty, it's appealing, but there's a lot of little side work if you want to be successful with it. I always just, you know, spend the $120 on a nice captive bred little baby. You get to grow it out, you know, get an animal this big, that's going to get this big. It's a much better experience.
I agree. And whether we're talking geckos or spiders or anything, like usually if you're getting an adult for, you know, a cheap price, you're going to end up paying on the back end. I mean, it's either not going to live long or you're going to have a lot of vet bills and other issues that you're going to have to be paying for. So it's always better to buy captive bred from a reputable local breeder. Support your local breeders.
I'm thinking with your day gecko, if it was a pet store, it was probably an imported animal, which might be the difference for why it's so, my chair's squeaking. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah, you're probably right. Cause I feel like almost everything they sell is either imported or mass bred, you know. Like,
they get that that max reptiles shipment to as like, I don't know, 20,000 reptiles or something.
Yeah. I've never had a good experience buying anything live from them before. I got a leopard gecko that's still thriving from them, but I mean, those things are pretty tough. So, you know, they're very easy to take care of. So they're resilient, I guess. But yeah. Do you ever do anything with Chinese cave geckos? I know I said we're going to wrap up, but I just want to know real quick.
Oh, man. I was doing pretty successful with them. And then my female passed, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a big bummer. I don't know why. Ironically, it was a pet store find. They just had a pair of cave geckos. I don't know. I didn't know any. There's no backstory. It was this hole in the wall place.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? It's a great price. They were very cheap. So I was like, I'll do it. I'll get them all fixed up and breed them. And I did good. I got a couple of eggs, but then the female passed. So now we just have, I think we have like 3 female juveniles that I'm growing out. And I just need to find another male and I can get back on my cave gecko game. Mm. It was a big bummer with how popular they are right now. Everyone wants a cave gecko. So for a while, that was all my messages were like, hey, cave gecko available? And I'm like, nope, not anymore. Unfortunately, it was a big loss on a couple fronts.
Yeah. I'm one of those people. I really want to get one of those cave geckos and have not.
Yeah.
You
can't
find
them anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Or there was one, the guy told me he had it at a reptile expo and I went, but by the time I got there, like a couple hours after they had opened, he's like, oh man, I already sold it. I'm sorry.
I think Barchek might have some.
Oh yeah.
If you're not looking to breed, I think he has like some boys right now. Yeah, I don't know if they're Chinese. I know they're caves, but they might be a different locality.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know enough about the localities to be able to differentiate them. It's one of those that Adam was just like, you should get a Chinese cave gecko. And I was like, all right, like I'll add that to the list. And I just,
they're cool. They're kind of like crock skinks where you don't really see them.
Yeah.
they kind of hide most of the time. But when you get to open the thing, you see this like goth leopard gecko.
Yeah.
You got to love them.
And I think it'd be fun to photograph them. But I'm going to have to get off here. I gotta go and meet these other guys and do this podcast, buddy. But thank you so much. It was great meeting you. And I really enjoyed our conversation. And hopefully you'll come back on again in the future.
Yeah, no worries, man. Love to come back.
All right. So DBCB Exotics, everybody go follow him on Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube. Check out his Facebook page and follow him on Morph Market. And get yourself a cool Tokay Gecko or, you know, something else he's got available. But Dakota, thank you so much, man.
We're downsizing some of our projects. So there is going to be some cool ready-to-breed stuff as well. Some adult, big lizards as well we'll have for sale.
Yeah? Oh, that's very cool.
Some cool stuff up there. Definitely want to peep it.
Yeah, definitely. So everybody go check it out. Thank you all for listening. Be sure that if you're listening on Spotify, be sure you're following. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave that 5-star review. Subscribe on YouTube, check out the website, and links for everything we've discussed will be down below in the description. So if you forgot what we talked about already, just go down there in the show notes. I'll have links to all of his social media. And again, thank you so much, Dakota, and thank you everybody for listening. Goodbye. We are done. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, no worries, man.